All right, folks, welcome in to our Friday Extra. Glad to have you with us, digging out from a lot of heavy snow. It's crazy, but we're not going to let that get us down. We're talking today in history, right? And we're focusing on World War II over the last few Fridays, and we're going to continue doing that. Masters of the Air, it's on Apple TV. I sure hope you check it out. It is a phenomenal documentary that follows up on really what these heroes did during World War II, what they fought for, the B-17s, B-24s. You've seen Band of Brothers. You've seen the Pacific. This is just like that, and it does a great job capturing what these men did to fight for the freedom of not only our country, but for those throughout Europe, right? And so in 1944, on March 15th, it was the heaviest Royal Air Force raid in World War II thus far. The bombs were dropped in Stuttgart, Germany, with 3,000 tons of bombs dropped from 863 bombers. They did lose 36 planes on that mission, but it was the heaviest raid with the Royal Air Force and the Army Air Corps. So a lot of people think, well, don't you mean the Air Force? No, in World War II, it was the Army Air Corps. The Air Force came at a later date in time, and they were flying these missions with the Royal Air Force. And a lot of the times they're leaving separate bases, separate airfields, and then meeting up in the sky before they went to their target that they were bombing. And they were escorted a lot of the time by P-51 pilots, and they protected them against the Luftwaffe Air Force at that time that were coming in to attack these bombers as they were on their mission to drop bombs throughout of Germany occupied. At that point, you know, there was areas of France that were occupied by the Nazis. And these men, a lot of the time, we're flying missions day after day, protecting our freedom throughout the free world. So that's a little bit of a day in history. And today we had a tough time getting our hometown hero on the line. It's brought to you by Marigolds, but no worries. We'll pick up next week with that hometown hero. And remember, if you know somebody who served in the military, is serving, law enforcement, firefighter, get a hold of us. You can just text me personally, 719-232-1063. That's 232-1063. We'd love to have them on the show. And just a big thank you from the folks at KRDO. We want to hear their story. And then obviously, Marigolds picks up their tab for a wonderful dinner as just a thank you for choosing to serve our great country and our city. We'll be right back after these messages. We're talking with Senator Lundeen about what is going on at the Capitol, the good and the bad of the bills that are coming out early in the year here. All right, folks, Okay. Welcome back to The Extra here on KRDO. It's always fun to do that hometown hero, the segment before we honored those who've served our country. It's brought to you by Marigolds. We do that every week, and it's just such an honor. We're surrounded by such great men in police, fire, military, and it's a fun thing to start off the Friday honoring those who choose to make the ultimate sacrifice serving us. And now we are back with Senator Larry Liston. He's doing a great job up at the Capitol, and I asked him to come on and just say, can you really inform us on a little bit of what you're seeing in the legislation up there? And Larry, thanks for taking the time to join us.
You bet, Justin. It's my pleasure to speak to you and all your listeners from the Capitol here in downtown Denver.
Well, thanks for taking the time. And just if people aren't acquainted with your district and senator at the state level, what you guys do, how long's your term, things like that. If you want to give us a little background, how you got involved in politics, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, first of all, I am a state senator. I represent Senate District 10, which, to kind of give you a general idea, my western boundary is I-25 on the west. My southern boundary is roughly Constitution, heading all the way east out to Mark Scheffel. And then it goes up to Mark Scheffel, up to about Woodman, and then comes back to the west along Woodman. So I commonly tell people I represent the Senate 10 is the north central part of Colorado Springs. Think of The Wasson area, University of Colorado, Colorado Springs is in my district, Colorado Springs Country Club area, and a fair portion of Village 7 and out east across Powers. And I was elected to the Senate in 2020, up for re-election this year. I served in the House off and on for 12 years, not consecutively. I represented House District 16, which is some of the same area that I just described. I had a real job too. As I like to point out, I'm not a professional politician. I worked for the Royal Bank of Canada for 31 years in the investment business, and I've lived in Colorado Springs for 57 years, almost entirely within my Senate district. I currently serve the ranking member on the Business, Labor, and Technology Committee, and I serve on the State Veterans and Military Affairs Committee. And last but not least, I'm on the Senate Appropriations Committee. So that's a little bit about who I am. I'm married to my lovely wife, Mary Ann, as well.
There you go. That's great. That's quite the background. And so 12 years you're off and on in the House. Tell us how you, was that just the start of your political career? Were you doing stuff before, whether it be school district or did you go right to the Capitol?
No, I was active in local politics. I was the chairman of House District 16 and the chief of staff for my predecessor. Some of your longer, older members might remember my mentor, Representative Bill Sinclair, and I served, I helped him a lot considerably as his campaign manager and chairman of his House district. You name it, within House District 16, I was a precinct leader, division leader, active in local politics. And then when he got termed out in 2004, I ran for the State House in House District 16 and served for 8 years, and then got termed out and then came back 4 years later back into my House district for another four. And then, like I say, in 2020, I got elected to the State Senate, which is Senate 10.
And it is really the heart of Colorado Springs when you think about it. You look at the map, Senate 10 is right smack in the middle, and we've seen so much growth, especially around UCCS, and you have Palmer Park right in the middle there, which is just beautiful parkland. And so you really are in the heart of things. Where you were before, Senator, was serving on the House, what district was that, or you can say just, I guess, the region of Colorado Springs you were representing?
Yeah, when I was in the House, that was House District 16, and in my day, pretty much all of House District 16 was in Senate 10. Think of the Garden Ranch area, UCCS, and Village 7. It didn't go out past Powers, but it was all within Senate 10. So it was just a natural when my predecessor left, Owen Hill, it was a natural for me to move up into the Senate, and I did. And like I say, it's been my honor and privilege to represent the good people of Senate 10 for the last 4 years, though really some of the people I've represented off and on now for the better part of 16 years. So I have a real affinity for that part of town. I went to Wasson High School back when it was a high school, and I even went to UCCS as a freshman, and I took graduate level courses at UCCS. So I really know the people of that part of town. I mean, I know people all over, but it's a unique district. And wonderful people, great constituents. The University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, is, as I said, is in my district. I've worked very closely with the administration and the staff at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. I've been a real advocate. A lot of people don't realize the economic impact that UCCS has. It's probably north now of $500 million to the economy of Colorado Springs. And so I've been very fortunate to work legislatively with the administration and get some good things accomplished, expand their physical plant and the campus. I've tried to work very closely and to continue the success that UCCS has in Colorado Springs.
It is great. It's a huge contribution to the Springs, and it's great to see the growth. And it's a beautiful campus. I mean, it sits in the foothills. It's gorgeous. And so let's talk a little bit about, you've had a lot of time here of service up at the Capitol. You've seen a lot of changes, and it's no secret Colorado has become a little bit more left, right? We were more of a conservative state when you probably first started serving at the House, and there's been lots of changes over the year. Tell us a little bit about what you've seen maybe throughout the last decade, and then what your feeling is overall going in to this year.
Sure. Well, when I came into the House, I started in 2005, the Republican Party had just lost the majority in both the House and the Senate, which both houses flipped in the election. It was a huge change, because prior to that, for the 10, 15 years prior or more, the House and the Senate had been controlled by the Republican Party. And it changed dramatically, or it changed certainly in 2005. We regained the majority briefly when I was there in 2011 and 12, where, like I say, I was the chairman of the Business Labor Committee, which was a good, powerful committee. But then we lost it again. What I've noticed over the last, particularly over the last half a dozen years or more, is I realize things evolve from state to state, and we're no longer a red state. Well, actually, we're a pretty blue state. But what has been the real shock to me, and I'm not alone in this, is the radical ideas. There were I'll say middle of the road Democrats, moderate Democrats, and Republicans. But the real shift now has been way to the left. Things that are being proposed, and I'll touch upon those in a minute or two, by the party in power, which has been in power now for the most part for the last 10 or 12 years. It's just unbelievable, the anti-business, anti-private property rights, anti-Second Amendment. Colorado and the legislature has lurched dramatically to the left in the last 4 to 6 years. That's been the big change.
And we're going to hear more about that, folks. We're going to have a quick commercial break. You're going to hear from ABC News. Then we're going to be right back with Senator Larry Liston. We're going to dive into some of the stuff going on up at the Capitol, how it could be impacting you. You're listening to KRDO News Radio on The Extra. Okay, folks, we are back into it here. We're talking with Senator Liston, represents District 10, and he served in the Senate as well as the House for a number of years. He has a wealth of knowledge. We got the privilege of having him on the show today. And so let's dive right in, Senator, talk a little bit about, we can start with lodging and property tax, that's Senate Bill 33, where they're trying to reclassify these short-term rentals up to a commercial grade as far as higher property tax, which would pretty much quadruple it for those who are running a short-term rental. What are kind of your thoughts on that? What's going on?
Well, that bill originated this past summer. I also served on the what we call the Tax Policy Committee, the interim tax policy, and this was a huge change. That right now, for your real estate listeners, whether it's short-term rentals or VRBO, what is being proposed is that the people in Colorado Springs or all over the state, especially some of your mountain communities, that have put their their life savings and a good portion of their wealth into a piece of property that they want to rent out a room to somebody for 6 months or more. They certainly pay taxes and so forth, but the impact of Senate Bill 33, it would be, as you mentioned, it would be to basically quadruple the property tax rate from the residential rate, which is right around 6 point something percent to about 28%, and that would have huge implications for the short-term rental market. Quite frankly, there'd be a lot of people to see their property taxes when they quadruple. They would just say, "Hey, I can't afford to do this anymore," and they would have to either sell their property or take it out of the real estate market, which would make it very difficult for them to make their ends meet on their mortgage payments and so forth. So it's being proposed by one of the senators in Denver, and it would be devastating to the people who commonly we call the mom and pop real estate, where they own a nice piece of property and they rent out a room or two, and it would have huge negative impacts on them. Senate Bill 33.
Yeah, and it's a total invasion on your property rights, and across the board you look at it, it is really, you're putting everybody into one bucket, if I understand correctly, where you could have somebody who has 10 short-term rentals, or the person who is going, "Hey, when we go down to Arizona for the winter time, or we're just renting out one room, we're retired, we're on fixed income, we're doing this to survive the higher taxes that have already gone into place, the higher insurance rates, the higher mortgage rates, all these things are happening to take away a tool." When we hear so many of the people talk about affordable housing, this is making it less affordable. So it really is, it's a head scratcher for me.
Yeah. Well, and I remember the day of the hearing. I had just come back into state. It was actually October 31st. The hearing room, which normally we have, I'll say, 5 or 10 or 15 people, the room was packed to the gills. I mean, there must have been 100 or more people who were, and they were just representative of the many hundreds or thousands of people. Like I say, they were very, very upset and concerned, and it was passed on a party line vote. Myself and one of my colleagues, we voted no on the legislation, and they still passed it anyways. And to my point, that is just how things have changed. Property rights are no longer sacred anymore. To that point, another bill that has just been passed is House Bill 1098 by another Denver senator. It's called the Just Cause Eviction. And what it will basically do, it will prevent landlords from evicting tenants without cause. So basically, a tenant, once again, for the people who own a piece of real estate, even whether it's large or small, no longer at the end of the lease, a year's lease or whatever, they will be unable to basically go back to the tenant and say, "Hey, thanks for being here, but we're ready to move on, and you're going to have to find another place to live." This House Bill 1098 will prevent a landlord from a reasonable, it's not so much just an eviction, but just saying, "Hey, we don't really need to have you anymore for whatever reasons," and they can turn around and be sued. It's a gold mine for the trial lawyers, and there's other implications that if the property is not, if there's a problem with heating or plumbing or whatever, the landlord will be forced to put up the tenant in a hotel, when costing them $150 a day. So it's going to be very devastating. House Bill 1098, that was just passed this past week. Lots of debate on it, but they went ahead and they passed it anyways.
Yeah, and just so you know, folks, the only way you get around that is if you're moving back in, a relative is, or the property's going for sale. But say you have a tenant who is not keeping up the lawn, maybe, you know, isn't keeping up the inside, is kind of disrupting the neighborhood, and you say, you know, I just think we need to go our separate ways. I'm not going to renew your lease. They're coming in with this new proposal and saying, well, you have to pay 2 months relocation then. So if you're charging $2,000 a month, you owe your tenant $4,000 just because, you know, you're not moving back into it and you just chose to find another renter. And then also, depending on the age of the renter or if there's any disabilities, could be as simple as nearsighted, you could owe up to three times the amount of what rent is. And when I did some research on this, I found out quickly they're taking this right out of areas like San Francisco and saying, okay, how can we apply this here in Colorado? And Senator, you're completely correct, because as I did some investigation and talked to owners of investment properties in San Francisco, they told me it's as high as $10,000 to $12,000 that they have to pay in attorney fees just to end a lease now, because it's gotten so far down the road and it's become such an invasion on property rights.
Well, and you're absolutely correct, Justin. The other thing is that while this misguided piece of legislation was meant to help tenants, what it's going to do is going to force landlords to increase their rents, increase their damage deposit, and certainly put in some very, very strict covenants, you know, into their lease agreements. So the very people that they're supposedly trying to help, the tenants are going to find it. The real estate market and the rental market is going to shrink or collapse.
Yeah, and it's a head scratcher, because right now we're finally seeing prices come down on homes for sale and on rental properties. Actually, last month prices came down on rentals, and so the market is naturally correcting itself. And I look at this and go, you're exactly right. We're going to have less people wanting to rent their property, or some owners going, well, I'm just going to let it sit vacant for a couple months until I find the absolute perfect tenant, because I'm so scared of all this new legislation. So in turn, unfortunately, it will hurt the tenant. And it's too bad to see this overreach going on. But we have about 5 minutes left. We gotta end with some good. It can't be all negative today. And I loved seeing the nuclear energy proponent that you have in this Senate Bill 39. Tell us a little bit about that.
You bet. Well, there is some good and some bad. I recognize, and we all want to. Clean air, clean water, a clean environment. That's natural. But under statute right now, the only forms of clean energy are wind, solar, geothermal, and certain types of hydroelectric. For some reason, and this goes back a number of years ago, nuclear energy was left out of the definition as a form of clean energy. And as even though a lot of people like wind and solar, there's a place for it. The energy demands that are ever increasing will not be able to be met by only exclusively wind and solar. We see that in Colorado Springs, where we've taken down the Drake Power Plant. It's a coal plant. Coal is no longer ever increasingly a factor. So I proposed a bill that would have defined nuclear energy as a form of clean energy, because it truly is. It's carbon free, it's emissions free, and it is coming. And I had great, great witnesses from all over the country that literally came and testified, nuclear engineers, scientists, people in the energy field. And unfortunately it was killed because there's still some people that think about nuclear energy of the technology of 30, 40, or 50 years ago. But while I lost the battle of nuclear energy as clean energy, we're winning the war because ever increasingly numbers of people, especially young people today, are coming to realize that there will be a role and a place for nuclear energy. And to that point, it may come as close to us as down in Pueblo, where they'll be closing the Comanche 3 coal plant over the next 2 years. And to replace all of that, there may be what's called a small modular reactor that's put in place down there. So and we've also started a nuclear caucus up here as a result of this bill. There's a lot of interest, bipartisan interest, on having Colorado look and analyze and start looking at nuclear energy as a role for energy here in Colorado. So I'm very pleased to sponsor that piece of legislation.
It's great. And you see other states like Georgia doing the same thing. And you have to look at other ways to create energy. And nuclear is. It's one of the it's the cleanest, really. And you look at the power plant, like you said, Drake Power Plant coming down. You can't get by with buying energy off the market and just with wind and solar. And we're learning that as people's rates have increased dramatically. At least they've leveled a little bit as far as utilities. But I'm glad to see that you're having the conversation about nuclear, because many other states are as well. They're saying, hey, how can we get ahead of this, before prices get so out of line that home ownership and even a rental property where you're responsible for your utilities becomes a major burden.
Yeah. Well, and to the point, you know, we have a Amazon now in Colorado Springs, and a big area of Amazon is what they call Amazon Web Services, AWS. And all your big companies that are in data centers like Amazon and Microsoft and so forth, they are looking very closely at having their data centers, which are huge users of energy, to have nuclear to help power these big data centers that are on the West Coast and the East Coast. There is legislation that we're trying to attract these data centers to Colorado, but we won't be able to do it just on conventional wind and solar or even natural gas. So there will be a role. It's not if nuclear energy will be coming to Colorado. It's just a matter of when. And so I'm very excited. I've got bipartisan interest and support. And I look forward to moving the ball in the area of nuclear energy here in Colorado.
Well, that's fantastic. Senator, we have about a minute left. I know you're running for re-election. I'd love for you to share your website, how people can donate, get involved, and tell us when that election is taking place. And like I said, how people can support you.
Sure. Well, once again, thank you for your time and appreciate your listeners' time. My website is friendsoflarryliston.com. Once again, friendsoflarryliston.com. You can send me a message there and or a question or whatever, and I will get back to you personally. My number up here in Denver, just for those who want to contact me, is area code 303-866-2737. And that rings right to my office. And myself or my legislative aide will gladly get back to you with any and all questions that you may have.
Fantastic. Senator, thanks for all the work you're doing up there. Best of luck on the reelection. And we look forward to having you back on in the near future.
Love to do it. Thanks, Justin. You have a great day, and my best wishes to all your listeners.
Thanks so much. All right, folks, that's another show of The Extra in the Books. You have Tom Martino joining you next.